I hope you're enjoying the 2015 MIT Sloan CIO Symposium. We've had a great session in the morning, a number of talks, and I'm very, very excited to present this panel on the Internet of Things. And so I welcome fellow alum, distinguished guests and travelers from out of town and from nearby. We have assembled a really world-class group of people who are working on the Internet of Things. And our moderator today is Stephen Rosenbusch. He has worked at the intersection of business and technology for major media publications such as Business Week, USA Today, Institutional Investor. Last year, he was appointed the editor of the CIO Journal, of the Wall Street Journal, and very privileged to have him and the rest of our guests talk to you today. Please welcome them all. Thank you.
Thank you, Atif. First of all, I just want to say that it's really a pleasure to be here. I'm thrilled. It's an honor to be here at this conference and this event, and I've learned a lot already. So I'm very, very excited about this particular discussion. Before I introduce our distinguished panel, I just want to say a few quick things. We have about an hour. There's a lot of ground to cover. Sort of envision the discussion unfolding this way. We'll talk a little bit about what IoT is, where are we, where do we think we are in terms of adoption. We'll talk a little bit about preparation, what does the CIO need to do to get ready for IoT, the security challenges, and then we'll really talk about what does it mean, why do we care, what are the implications for the role of the CIO, the organization, and so forth. And then there'll absolutely be questions, time for questions from you, the audience, at the end. I just want to make one or two really quick remarks before we get started. I think IoT has been a pretty significant part of our coverage at CIO Journal over the last few years, and I think one of the really interesting things about IoT is that it's changed. A few years ago, when we launched, we wrote a story about Shell Oil and refinery, a drilling platform, actually, that it had constructed in the Gulf of Mexico. And there was a lot of discussion about IoT, about sensor-enabled drill ships, listening devices that were able to radically improve exploration and recovery of natural resources. And that had a huge effect, maybe not so much on Shell, which is still trying to find growth, but overall, looking beyond Shell, all of that technology had a huge impact on the ability to recover more energy. It's had a huge impact on energy prices. It's had a huge impact on the economy. So not a small impact at all. A few weeks ago, I spoke with Mark Fields, the CEO of Ford Motor Company, and had a completely different discussion. Shell was really something of an early mover. Ford, not really an early mover, but when it started to move, it moved in a big way, in a really interesting way. You know, they expanded their presence in Silicon Valley from maybe half a dozen people to 120 people, many of them focused on the connected car and other IoT initiatives. They hired a chief digital officer, and the discussion is now about Ford, you know, less as a car company, more as a mobility company, and more as a services company. So I think that what that tells me is that there are a lot of big companies that have been on the sidelines, and they're starting to get really serious about this, and they're thinking about it in terms of what it means for the business, what it means for the business model. And that's what I hope that we can really explore today. I'd like to introduce the panel now. Michael Chui is the director of the McKinsey Global Institute in Silicon Valley, and he oversees research in a number of areas, including IoT. Phil Regno is a senior vice president with Hitachi Consulting and a veteran of Oracle and Siebel, does a lot of work helping organizations transition to the IoT. Richard Sobel is the founder, the director of the Industrial Internet Consortium, which is focused on getting companies to work together, developing standards, very, very important area. And Marcus Weinberger comes to us today from Switzerland, where he is the director of the Bosch Research Center at the St. Gallen University. And he's involved in the connected home, the connected car, and many other projects that involve IoT. So with that, I'm going to ask one very general question of the audience, and then we're going to go around the panel, get a sense of what the panel thinks about this question, and then we'll just start to talk. So I'd like to see just a quick show of hands. How many people in the room today work for an organization, for a company that is in the midst of deploying IoT? It's more than I would have thought. How many people in the room think that we're at the very early stages of adoption? Does anyone think that we're in the middle stages of adoption? I can see where this is headed, but does anyone think that we're in the later stages of adoption?
And the rest are asleep.
All right. All right, with that, I'm going to ask the panel to weigh in. Michael, please, quickly, we're just going to go to sort of a lightning round. Tell me how much IoT do you make use of in your work, and where are we in adoption right now?
So I'm a researcher, so I observe other people using IoT. In terms of where we are, it's NBA playoff season. We're in the first 2 minutes of the first quarter.
All right. Phil, please.
We help others implement IoT. The use internally within a consulting firm, a professional service firm, is fairly limited right now, but we can certainly come up with some imaginative case studies on how we could use it. But the rest of Hitachi does quite a bit. We'll talk about that more.
Where do you think we are in terms of adoption, just in general?
Early stage.
Yep. Richard,
very much so.
I would say early stage as well, but I wouldn't say quite as early as Michael said, only because I can point at some design wins where the technology is being used today. I'm sure we'll hear about some from Bosch, but I know a dairy farmer in the fields outside of San Jose, Costa Rica, where he gets 40% more milk from his cows because he's using an IoT-enabled infrastructure. So, and yes, I'll be happy to explain more about that later. So, there are certainly major design wins out there today, and the technology is nothing new. So while it's early in terms of adoption in companies, it doesn't mean the technology is immature.
I think it's called Moo IT, right?
That's what it is. That's what it is.
The Internet of Cows. Marcus, please.
I'd agree that we are very early in terms of adoption, in terms of finding the interesting use cases that make sense also from a business case point of view. I compare it frequently with what the home computing was in the 80s when nobody or many people were interested and found there is something cool coming up, but nobody knew what to do with it except playing games, Jumpman, and a really hyped application at that point of time was storing cooking recipes on your computer. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's no question what you need a computer for at home.
You asked adoption. Where are we in adoption,
yes,
not in the development of the technology?
Right.
Yes.
Right?
So where are we in adoption?
I think that's an important differentiation.
Yeah,
okay.
You've left out VisiCalc. Here at MIT, you have to mention VisiCalc.
That's right.
Why don't we just spend a minute talking about what do we mean by IoT? I'm going to open this up to the panel. I know that some of you have really good working definitions, so just feel free, throw something on the table.
I'm always happy to take that. I mean, it's simple, right? It's taking information from sensors, potentially thousands, tens of thousands, millions, potentially worldwide, doing real-time predictive analytics, which people are calling big data. Unfortunately, big data has 27 different definitions at the moment. Displaying that usefully to human beings or bypassing human beings, humans out of the loop and directly to actuators in the real world. That's it.
Would anyone like to add anything to that definition?
In the spirit of simplicity, I think it's simply the interface between the physical world and the virtual world full stop.
So keyboards. Sensors
and actuators are the enablers of that, to be sure. But I think the integration of those two worlds is now really happening through IoT.
I'd agree with my fellow panelists. I just say, actually, I think relatively few of the currently deployed applications involve predictive analytics yet. And so what we've found is less than 1% of the data that's being generated out of these sensors is ever used. And then most of the time it's used, it's actually not used for predictive yet. We do think the opportunity is there for predictive and optimization, but mostly for anomaly detection or alarms or real-time control.
Well, while I agree with you, and in fact, at Bosch Connected World, an event where we almost met, Stefan Brungardt from General Electric said, did you know that the General Electric diesel locomotives collect 9 million points of data every second? Mm-hmm. And I said, that's interesting. How many are used? And he said, three. I said, wow, 3 million, a third, that's not bad. He said, no, three.
Marcus, do you have anything to add to the definition? Yeah.
I think I just wanted to add the notion that this really, and I think this is a very powerful picture, that it really merges the physical and the digital world. And by understanding this, we can really elaborate on lots of interesting applications and implications.
So I think that there's a little bit of an interesting tension here. The technology seems to be, if not in the later stages of development, it's not brand new and it seems to work, and yet adoption is still really quite low. I think we'd all agree. So my question, and we'll just go in order, starting with Michael, and working our way straight down the line. What stands in the way of greater adoption right now? And what does the CIO or the company need to do to break through those obstacles?
Well, fundamentally, the problem is terrible salespeople. No,
I resemble that.
wasn't pointing at you. One of the things that we've seen in all technologies, and we've studied many different technologies and their deployment and their impact, is that there's usually a lag between the investment and the development of that technology and its eventual impact. And most of that is because it has to be accompanied by simultaneous or complementary management innovation. So not only does the technology have to be there, but we need to figure out what the use cases are, how you capture value, how you put the right incentives in place. And it's really, I think, the second part. I mean, there's still lots of technology stuff that has to happen for additional adoption, but really it is around finding the business models or finding the use cases within an organization which are going to drive that value. And there are a bunch of barriers for that happening.
So the businesses are, the obstacles in your view are basically understanding what the business purpose is. And that's not clear.
Yeah, understanding what the business purpose is, how you evaluate that value, how you identify the value drivers, and then overcoming a bunch of obstacles, which include organizational, which include some regulatory, some security and confidentiality. There are a bunch of things that are blockers to additional adoption.
Yeah. Phil?
I'll build on the blame game here with salespeople. I'm going to blame marketers, not the sellers. I think we're not yet doing a good enough job of translating what is relatively esoteric, and that is the idea of a sensor and an actuator. It's kind of the so what. Okay, so we have sensors, we have actuators, we have middleware, we have analytics and all that. But talking more in terms of the energy efficiency that is gained by deploying certain kind of HVAC systems, smart HVAC systems that generate data that is then analyzed and that is acted on, and new systems are built accordingly, or an EMS system that allows for increased responsiveness because of certain telematics that are in the vehicle. We have to talk about, I think, IoT in the context of impact and not in the technology in and of itself. And as soon as we do and people start to grasp those concepts, we'll have a snowball effect and we'll be rolling up that hype curve, and then we'll be talking, I think, about being in the fourth quarter.
Thank you.
In the fourth quarter. I there are plenty of use cases, right? And I think we already know what many of those use cases are. The test beds at the Industrial Internet Consortium include manufacturing, more efficient and safer manufacturing, better integration of wind and solar energy into smart grids, better logistics based on integrating information from the farm, from harvesters, with integration with food wholesalers and retailers, power generation, distribution and transmission, healthcare device integration. There are plenty of use cases. I think we have the usual problem that we have whenever we talk about technology drivers rather than business uses. So just pulling together what both of you have said, I completely agree. You have to focus on the business use case and then see how that drives the use of the technology. But there's no question that the technology is valuable.
Yeah. I'd like to add that in some cases that I experience in practice, it's really a problem that there are so many thinkable use cases. Mm-hmm. And once you start trying to evaluate all these or value all these use cases, it gets even more complicated. So in many cases, it's really a problem for a specific project to find the reasonable use cases, 1, 2, 3, 4, not more, that you really go for, and that you then try to implement. Otherwise, and I saw this frequently, you just get lost with all the options and all the possibilities and what you could do.
I'd like to just play devil's advocate just for a moment. No doubt use cases are critical and ultimately it's about the business, but at least for a while, is it about the technology as well? I spoke to the CIO of American Airlines not so long ago, and she told me that every flight generates something on the order of 50 terabytes of data. That's a transatlantic flight, you know, from, say, New York to London. I said, well, that's great. You know, what do you do with that data? And she said, well, nothing, because, you know, we don't have the physical infrastructure in place to capture that data, let alone analyze that data right now. So the question that I have is, where do you think companies are typically in terms of building out the IT infrastructure that's necessary to handle volume of data that simply didn't exist when most of this infrastructure was designed 30 years ago?
You know, I think this is a story of first quarter versus third, fourth, or quarter. You know, one of our observations is there is already a ton of data which is potentially usable. And I think, you know, some companies have at least enough infrastructure to use more than the less than 1% that they're using. That being said, if you're going, you know, if you're asking, you know, the four or two turbines in a jet plane, plus the rest of the data that's being generated, can that get real time to an operation center right now? No, that technology does not exist yet. Is there more that you could do right now without needing to build out some sort of, you know, multi-gig connections to every flying aircraft? Yeah, there's plenty of opportunity now. We ought to continue to think about the future and what additional investments have to be made, but there are things that people can do right now, and there are real use cases where people are starting to do that.
IoT is not a singular technology. It's not a singular concept. It's an amalgam or a mashup of a lot of different technologies that each in and of themselves are at different levels of maturity already. So if we talk about the physical device itself has to be, it sends data through a sensor typically, or that is in turn connected to the internet either through a short or long range. That data then is captured in a database. That's a 40-year-old technology, continues to evolve, but it's been around for a while. It's manipulated using middleware, integrated into other systems. You have master data management solutions that come into play. You have analytical solutions that come to bear on it. And then the data is sent back to the device potentially to actuate something. All the component technologies there have been around for a while. And so, I think we're ready to take advantage of that today. It's just a question of each element in that technology stack maturing in their own sense, but then also starting to operate as a whole, which is why I'm sure this conversation at some point will morph into the idea of building vertically integrated solutions, mm-hmm. taking all those elements together.
It will.
All right, if John Cullinane's in the room, he's probably pissed that you said databases are only 40 years old. But anyway, there is no excuse for not doing something with this technology today. There is no excuse for just throwing away that data today. Data storage is practically free. Data analysis tools start at free and get more expensive. But I mean, you can download open source data analysis tools. Whether they're best or not is secondary. You can start playing with this now and find out things that you don't already know by correlating the data that you're getting off those jet engines in the case that you're talking about. In fact, I mean, that's what kicked this off at General Electric with their Predict software, is finding out things about how to maintain their jet engines at a higher peak of performance by correlating information that was coming off those engines. There's no excuse for not using this technology today. Enough of it is mature. I mean, Phil, I agree, but enough of it is mature that there's really no reason not to start right now.
I feel very comfortable because all the experts already answered the question, so I can elaborate on what I ever want to. Now, I think there's two aspects that I want to mention. On the one hand, we were talking a lot about, Phil already mentioned, there's also this device level in types of technology, and there's also, of course, questions to be answered and technologies to be developed further, like how long does a battery last on a battery-powered sensor, for example, what bandwidth do you have for long-range data transmission wirelessly, things like that. Another aspect that could be interesting looking at is, I mean, at the moment, in this early stage we are building end-to-end solutions in most cases for IoT end-to-end solutions. But the vision that I think many of us share is that at some point of time, there will be something like a web of things. So things talking directly to each other. And this would also require freeing all the data from the silos that they are sitting in at the moment and making them accessible from outside and for other applications and things like that. This could be an additional aspect to what we have at the moment and what we are dealing with at the moment.
If I could just throw in, I mean, we're at MIT after all. I don't think any of us think all of the technologies have been invented and solved, right? So there's lots of interesting things going on about real-time stream processing, et cetera, and that's going to get better, and integration of data from multiple sources. Lots of technology challenges to continue, but I think there's some consensus that even though that stuff needs to get better, there are things you can do right now, and gosh,
so what are the obstacles? Are they organizational, cultural?
Well, there certainly are organizational obstacles. You know, we're at a CIO event, for instance, and if you think about what the traditional
you
scope...
You think CIOs are the obstacle? I'm just
as a former one, I resemble
okay,
that remark.
But
as for certain, right, I mean, CIOs, their scope of influence had typically been the data center, whatever sitting in front of somebody, whether it's a notebook computer or what have you, and some mobile devices. But now when you start to embed IT into everything, into the physical assets of a company, into the inventory of a company, then you realize, I mean, we've always said the CIO should be aligned with the rest of the business or, you know, partner with the rest of the business, part of the rest of the business. It physically instantiates that fact more than anything else. And now the metrics of success for IT truly must become the metrics of success for the rest of the business, because now IT is embedded literally in the physics of the business itself.
Maybe you can put it to this point to say, okay, on the one hand, you can leverage IoT to increase efficiency, reliability of your own operations. But the other aspect is that you can really integrate IoT into your products. And at that point of time, IT becomes a part of your product, so to say. So we have an example that we frequently use, enhancing a dumb light bulb. Up to now, it was kind of dumb. With processing power, sensing, and connectivity, and making a security, smart home security device. So producing a light bulb, the product did not comprise any IT up to that point of time. Once you do this smart home security light bulb thing, IT is a part of your product.
I think the next step actually is not just that you have smart manufacturing and smart products, but you have data that comes from those devices, smart data.
Yeah.
That's what changes, for example, quite often the business model from a capital expense to an operational expense. You're able to lease that because you know much more about and you therefore know much more about how the product is used. You know how to design the next product, and you know how to optimize its use and so forth. But I mean, the original question was, what are the obstacles? I mean, I think there are still some interesting technical obstacles, and the ones that most people talk about are interoperability and security. But I do think that the organizational obstacle to trying new things is a pretty major obstacle, right?
And also, some technical obstacles still exist, like the number of nodes on the internet. I mean, I think you published an article, didn't you, last week about we're running out of IP addresses. So IPv6 and the adoption of that is critical. continued innovation that's happening here on campus around power management, battery life, and using organic forms. I think that's going to be critical. But as far as adoption and rolling out IoT philosophy and technology inside the enterprise, I think that the biggest impediment right now is the fact that most, and I'm generalizing, I think most enterprises haven't yet bridged internally and organizationally the IT realm with the OT realm. And that's really what is at the root of IoT in the enterprise. It's the convergence of information technology and operational technology. But the CIO traditionally thinks that her domain is exclusively in the information technology realm. But now that CIO has to become engaged on operational technology, where you have smart plant machinery or the vehicles in the fleet are generating data that then become part of the information technology infrastructure within the enterprise. And so bridging that IT-OT divide inside the enterprise, to me, right now stands in the way of living up to all the imagination that is out there with IoT.
I'm going to agree with you on one thing and disagree on the other. I don't think IPv6 matters one way or the other. Okay. There are already more devices on the internet than there are IP addresses because of mobile phones, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem to have broken anything. And we can talk about the technical reasons why, but it doesn't really matter. We already have more IP devices than IP addresses, and it hasn't really caused a problem. So sorry about the article.
No,
hasn't caused
a
problem yet. Yeah. But I will agree that there are sustainable solutions that you can build today using the technology that exists today, What's missing today to create that link between the information technology world and the operational technology world is internet thinking on the operational side. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I look at programmable logic controllers from 1980. They look pretty much the same 35 years later. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was only 4 years old at the time, so maybe I don't remember. They're basically built the same way. They use the same programming language. They don't interface the same way with information technology solutions. That lack of internet thinking is the real problem.
How do you think the issues of interoperability and security can be addressed? And I sort of think that maybe they're part of the same problem.
Well, at least just at base, I mean, interoperability came up before. As we did our research, something like if you look at all the potential value that can be created by IoT, and we're sizing it in trillions of dollars annually, when you include not only product revenues, but actually the benefits that a customer can get, something like 40% on average of all the value you can create requires interoperability. There are lots of ways of creating interoperability. There are open standards. There's lots of standards work going on. If you think of it as languages, then you can also have interpreters, whether it's middleware or some other sorts of translation software. All of that work heretofore basically hasn't been done as much as it needs to be done. And so, you're going to see people use software in order to solve some of these problems. Hopefully we'll see more open standards so that these systems talk with each other. Otherwise, we're going to create less value than we potentially can, nearly by half.
On the theory that there should be more discussion and disagreement on the panel, I'm going to say we don't need any more middleware standards. The organization that I chair, the Object Management Group, a standards organization, is 26 years old, published the first middleware standard 25 years ago. There are plenty of middleware standards. There are plenty of standards for moving bits and bytes across the network. The hard part is how do you share information about jet engine performance? How do you share information about power generation, distribution, transmission? How do you capture and capture device information from actuators from dozens or hundreds of manufacturers? And how do you send information to actuators that are made by dozens or hundreds of vendors? That level of standard we do need, but to figure out what standard you need, you have to go try it. I call it the Nike approach, which is, hire 12-year-olds in Indonesia. No, which is just do it. Sorry about that. Thank you. Which is just do it. And that's what IIC is doing. We're building test beds. We're actually not a standards organization, as you mentioned. We build test beds to figure out what it is that works, where the disruptive new products and services are, where the transformational business outcomes, and secondarily, what standards do we need?
IETF says rough consensus and running code, right? Yeah.
One question that I have just from the testing perspective is you have, as Phil suggested a few moments ago, probably have verticals developing at some point. very different verticals. Some have chipsets that cost $15 or $20, some 50 cents. How do you develop some sense of security or interoperability that's common to all of them?
So the obvious answer is you look at all the different solutions and you come up with one solution that replaces all of them. Hmm. I call this the N+1 mistake. Every time somebody looks at, see, there are about 7 different power adapters in the world, power connections in the world, right? There's the one that God intended, sorry. There's the 2 round poles, and by the way, there are 3 different diameters.
Yeah.
As you know, if you've tried to plug a German device into an Italian outlet, Swiss outlet, yes. And so an engineer looks at that, and you know, I was one, so I can say this. An engineer looks at that and says, gee, we don't need 7.
You still are, give yourself credit.
Yeah, don't tell anyone. We'll come up with a new thing, and I'll replace the 4.5 billion power outlets out there and power connectors. It doesn't happen. The right solution is to mediate between them, right? That's why I say not common protocols, but common semantics, so that you can translate between them. That's how we operate in a room which probably speaks between 20 and 25 languages, but we've shared a way of sharing information with this panel. I'd be careful about looking for one solution, one ring to rule them all, although this would be the ring.
Marcus, how do you see interoperability playing out from your perspective?
I think what has already been said is pretty much true. At the end of the day, appealing applications, use cases, business cases behind that are the driving force to establish standards. And I believe pretty much that these will emerge from bottom up and not from standardization organizations at the end of the day, at the stage where we are now.
Yeah. Well, I think, I hope that those standards will actually be driven by what we learned from the test beds, and including one that's just being pushed into standards organizations now by that company, what is it called, Bosch?
Yeah.
From the Bosch Tech Mahindra testbed, actually. That's exactly what you want. Learn something from actually trying it. Just do it, and then learn something, and then build the standards when you know what's needed.
Yeah.
Thinking of it from the consultant's point of view, which is in some ways an extension of the IT organization, or the IT organization itself, you mentioned languages before, Michael, and I think which languages and which standards are used in the IoT is an important factor in the speed with which we'll really see IoT use cases adopted. The more traditional languages and standards that can be used, the faster it'll happen. The more new ones, the more new platforms that, I think there's someone mentioned to me earlier today that there's some 200 companies out there that claim to be an IoT platform. And many of them, probably the majority of them, require some new skill development. And new skill development and talent, all the talent management aspect that goes along with that, from recruiting to hiring to training, maintaining, retaining, becomes a challenge for the CIO. And so if we can stick with traditional languages and the skills and leverage the skills that already exist within the IT organization, you're going to adopt a lot more quickly.
We heard a lot about the value of a platform in an earlier panel. Do you folks see IoT developing as a platform or platforms, or do you see verticals developing because